everybody. Welcome into another edition of Head Coach U. I am Brian Fisher, joined as always by former BYU and Virginia head coach Bronco Mendenhall, and thrilled to welcome in John Summerall, the head coach of the Troy Trojans. John, thank you so much for stopping by in this episode.
Brian, I appreciate you having me. It's a pleasure to join you all today.
It is fantastic to have you on. You guys had one of the maybe the best debuts in terms of being a head coach. You guys going 11-2 last year and winning the Sun Belt, winning a bowl game. I know, thrilled for you guys. But we're speaking here late March, and I know a lot of focus in terms of college athletics, not necessarily on spring ball just yet, but on March Madness. I know a lot of staffs kind of have, you know, kind of a maybe a pickup game. And I don't know how good your jumper is right now, but what do you guys kind of do to just kind of get away from the office for 5 or 10 minutes?
Yeah, so I take walks daily with my wife during lunch. Now, our staff, they play noon ball, and I would put our staff up against anybody in college football. We've got a really athletic group, competitive, fairly young staff, and they come back. We have a staff meeting after lunch at like 1:15 every day. And the stories of who got the better end of the draw that day enter the staff room as we start that meeting. So My routine is walking my wife at lunch, but our staff is fully engaged, not just in March Madness, but in noon ball madness all the time. So they're always competing.
So how did you find these guys, John, the guys on your staff? And you mentioned some are younger. And so give us just a quick insight as putting together that crew. And obviously it's been successful so far and starting. But what was that process like, and where did you find them? And what were you looking for?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bronco. When I got here, a couple of the guys that were here as assistants on the previous staff, I had worked with when I was an assistant here years ago. And so a couple of those relationships, I knew what those guys were about. I knew they would fit maybe the vision of how I wanted the culture and the, you know, the cohesion of our program to be like. And so Kept a couple of guys that were previously here that had been here for several years, one of them. And then really, as I went through the process, I was really, really slow putting a staff together. My wife kids around, she was like, you're waiting for signs of miracles of who's the perfect fit. But I wanted to be very detailed though. And, you know, clearly you want people that have football knowledge and are good coaches and good teachers. But just as importantly, I wanted to make sure that they're the right fit for Troy, Alabama, Troy University, and they were the type of men of character that I wanted around our program daily, men of family, men of substance, that care deeply about others and about serving. And so really didn't hire maybe all my best friends. I hired some guys I knew, but I might have made a buddy or two mad because I just had to make sure that for me it was about finding the right fit for Troy right now and who was going to help maybe push the vision that I had in my head of what I wanted this to look like.
One of the things that along the way, I had a pretty simple rule over time, and this might resonate with you, but I wouldn't work with anyone I didn't like. And so a lot of people think that means that we were friends. And a lot of my staffs I built from within, graduate assistants or kids that played for me, then became GAs. And so I'd seen them in about every circumstance. And so I knew who they were regardless of context. But so sometimes when I say I wouldn't hire someone I didn't like, that doesn't mean just personally. That means they had to be fiercely competent professionally as well. And so yep. In our building, behind every door, my goal would be behind that door, if a player opened it, there'd be someone that was amazing at what they did, but also how they did it in terms of compassion, care, and the type of person that I couldn't wait to see every day. And I use the same thing in recruiting. And if I just couldn't see myself wanting to be around that person every day, then that was a no. Even though they might have been great tactician or strategic, but if they weren't the type of person, as you said, right, and there are different fits for different places. And so someone might fit great with you, but all of a sudden their family context may be in Troy, Alabama, right, or Charlottesville, Virginia, or Provo, Utah. Maybe that just doesn't quite fit their family at that time. And so, man, really wise to be slower on the front end, because the back end of a bad fit or a poor hire, player or coach, those conversations at the end when you're having to let someone go or they're not happy, I think almost every time if that did happen, and it happened over my career, I wish I would have spent maybe more time on the front end. And so pretty wise that you did that. And it looks like it's working well.
Yeah, it's gone well. Like I said, my AD and my wife were the two that were questioning how slow I was going. But a couple of mentors that I trusted just said, hey, look, don't worry about how fast you do it. Worry about how right you get it, you know, and be very deliberate and detailed. And so when I hire somebody, even if I know them, man, I will call like 50 people to find out like, hey, what's this guy like when things aren't going good? Yeah. You know, like it's everybody, you know, when things are going great, everybody can be a good person. What's happening when it's not going so good? When your back's against the wall? And I believe that if you're connected and you're cohesive as a staff, your players feel that and they feed off of that. If they're not, they also feel that and feed off of that too.
Certainly. And really, even in the context of a game, what someone's like on the headset in a game. So they're seeing a coach at the convention, or they're seeing him casually, or there's maybe working with them before. But there's a whole different relational component when a team is driving against you, or there's critical moments, and on the headset, what might happen. And so, yeah, the doing your research, it sounds like you were really thorough, which is super wise. Did you have priorities? So let's say, were you starting with your coordinators first? Were you starting with, did you have your sequencing already aligned, or how did you do that?
Very much so, yeah. Hired offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. Got both of those hires done about 2 weeks after accepting the job. So going back to being slow, it took 2 weeks to finally hire the OC and the DC, and I hired them within a day of each other. And then after that, for me, it was about getting the offensive line hire right. I'm a defensive guy in nature. I know what gives me problems defensively. But to me, from a teaching standpoint, I'm not going to walk in the offensive line room and just retool everything. I've got ideas maybe, but I don't need to go in there and teach that room every day. And to show that I feel like we did hire pretty good, I hired a guy named Cole Popovich in that spot, who since the Houston Texans have hired. So, you know, if we lose assistance to the NFL, I'm okay. That means we hired somebody that's probably pretty good. But O-line was critical. And then after that, just guys who fit, you know. I knew what I wanted, offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator, schematically to a certain degree. And then I wanted to make sure those guys that we hired behind them to support the coordinators really fit with the coordinator needed. Along with the other things, like we mentioned, that they fit the university and our program, they had to fit sort of stylistically what we wouldn't do in all phases. And so, but coordinators first, and then O-line, yeah, really close second, almost tied with the coordinators to me.
You know, one of the things that I think is becoming, and I don't know how you feel, this will be fun just to kind of consider for a second. For me, very similar in terms of what you chose, and then my secondary coach, I view him on almost the same light as the O-line coach. And so that's just a personal preference that I have, as those positions are, wow, do they have impact? But as I see it now, the strength coach component, right, with the amount of time that person spends with your players and his alignment with you, and the cultural reinforcement and promotion that happens, that to me, that hire. But now player personnel, with the selection and assessment and the unique landscape that way, those two positions to me are also some, where did those fit like within your construct, and how did that work?
Yeah. So before I answer that, I will say secondary, I think, is also critical. You know, nothing will cost you a game more than giving up goofy explosive plays where you just don't cover somebody. So the best thing that happened to me too, as a coach, my last 3 years before taking this head job, was going to work for Mark Stoops, who Mark's like a secondary guru. I mean, he's unbelievably gifted in seeing things. And so now, even though I'm a linebacker coach by trade, everybody that sits in a defensive room with me, they're like, coach, you're like a DB coach. You're not a linebacker coach anymore. And I'm like, yeah, because them getting 3 yards in a run doesn't beat us. Them getting 50 yards in a pass does. But I could not agree with you more on the strength coach perspective. And kind of, I'll give you an interesting insight to what happened here with my strength coach hire. came into taking this job with a couple people very, very central on my mind in regards to being a good fit with what I wanted to do here. When I took the job, I had a unique insight to the program a little bit because I had coached here 2015 to 17 with Neil Brown. And some of the kids that were like sixth year COVID seniors last year were kids that I recruited here when they were freshmen. And so most of those kids had become leaders in this program and just, you know, stalwarts of what doing things the right way looked like. And so when I took the job, I met with about 12 to 15 young men on the team individually. And I said, I'm not going to do this very often, but I'm going to do this now. I said, if you were the head coach today, give me two things you would change immediately or that you think have caused the program not to find the type of success we all want. And give me two things you would keep the exact same. And almost every one of those young men said, I really think you should keep the current strength coach.
Wow.
And to me, that's like a, whoa, that wasn't in my plans moment almost, but it kept coming up over and over and over again. And it wasn't one guy. I'd already had one conversation with the head strength coach and just said, don't know where I'm going yet. I'm going to be in touch with you. I'm going to take some time to figure this out. And we had had a conversation. I liked the conversation we had. It was fairly lengthy, but I still wasn't like, hey, that's the direction we're going. I didn't know yet. And as I did my research and got to know him better, I talked to our team doctor here. I talked to our athletic trainer here about, his, you know, how they felt about his involvement with the program and how he served the players. And, man, the more I found out, the more I was like, this guy might be a part of the solution in how we want to do things here. And his name's Rusty Witt. He was the head strength coach at Louisiana Lafayette with Mark Hudspeth, and he was at Texas Tech with Cliff. And he's a former Green Beret in the military.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a blue-collar, hard-nosed, just tough guy. I love him to death. He's kind of like a crazy big brother to me. But he's been a perfect fit for what we wanted culture-wise. And as I found more and more out, I was like, this is the direction we're going. Yeah. And so I think, once again, I believe it shows as you walk into something, yeah, you need to know what positions are significant and you cannot mess up. Not that you want to mess any of them up. Yeah. Yes, strength coach is one of them. But I also felt like I need to go into everything with an open mind. And I wasn't just going to make drastic change just to say I made change, but I wasn't going to keep people just because people spoke on their behalf. I needed to kind of get the whole picture. The whole picture for Rusty, the more I figured it out, I was like, this guy's a part of what we want to do here.
There's a number of words that you use that really resonated with me in talking about Rusty. When you're asking, how does he serve the players? This, our profession and leadership in general, it's really ego. It's really easy for it to become ego driven and for someone standing in front of young people daily for them to feel self-importance. And really it's not about the leader. It's about how can we serve and how can we help others become. That's the greatest gift we can give.
Yep.
And I think anytime it shifts to the players serving us or a coach serving us or I don't know, it seems to be what it's backwards. And I think maybe the more prestige we have, the more service we need to provide. And there's a unique combination of humility and will that come together. And I found with former Special Forces guys, there's a combination of they carry themselves in a really confident way, but also a humble way, just because they know they have the answers and they can. They don't need to really prove it to anybody. And I really like that mindset. And you were talking also just along the way, which I think is really, really powerful. You were curious and you were learning from the existing structure before you made your choices. And sometimes we go in thinking we have all the answers, but I think you are really smart to listen and assess before deciding. And so many times we decide before we listen and assess. And so I think you got that order really, really well. You're really well done and intentional about that.
Well, I think to the old adage, you know, measure twice, cut once, right? Like, let's not come in and just tear everything down. Let's figure out what needs to be tweaked and adapted and changed. And then to the other point you made, that I say to our staff all the time, if there were no players, there would be no coaches.
Yes.
Like, I've got 2 9-year-olds, a 6-year-old, and a 4-year-old. They love coming to games.
Yeah.
They don't come to games to watch me on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Like, the game's not about me. The program's not about me. And really, for me, you know, from my perspective, my job really gets a lot easier the simpler I make my decisions about, number one, is it in the best interest of our student athletes? And then two, what's in the best interest of our staff? And if I'm that clean and that direct in how I make decisions, my decision-making process gets a whole lot simpler and cleaner and efficient. And, you know, there would be no head coach if there wasn't players. Like, I think too often, you know, coaches get too much credit when things go well and too much blame when they don't. And, you know, we're all mature adults and men, and this is our profession. So, yeah, you're ready for that blame and also for the credit. But I think, man, to me, it's about the team and it's about the individual development of our players and serving our players. And if we lose sight of that, then we've missed the boat completely.
I think that's true. And it's easy to lose yourself with the praise of the world that comes with the position you have, especially after success. And my hope is that you have the same kind of success over and over. And I that would be awesome. There's a chance if you're a head coach long enough that there might be a season or a game or something that doesn't quite go how you want it. And I don't know, I was always impressed with the leaders that would accept blame. And because really everything in the program you're responsible for, and that's just comes with the job. So I was always impressed with those that accepted the blame, even when you could see it was kind of outside of their scope, but they still stepped up and said, I'm the coach of the program. And I think there's a powerful lesson for young people there. But those same people, it seemed like they always deflected the praise, and it would then go to another coach, or it would go to a player, or it would go somewhere else, even though, right, there was an architect component and ownership they could have claimed. Those same people seemed to just deflect really gracefully when the accolades came. And I think those type of leaders were the ones that I've seen over time just remain the most consistent, authentic, humble, but also effective. And then when it comes to the portal and players leaving, et cetera, their players don't leave. They stay. And because they're certainly their the players' roles have something to do with it. I'm not going to make light of that. But in addition, there's a relational component that sometimes in college football today is glanced over. And what a shame, because young people want that. And I heard you talk about your kids. Right. They want that. And so I think surrounding yourself with people that are like that, but also the modeling that you're doing. Andy Reid was just on with us, and he talked about the head coach's closet has to be clean also, where, right, it's how you're living and how you're modeling, which is also, as you know, right, that your players and your own children, they watch everything. And so the chance for influence and impact is, I feel lucky to have held that position that you hold. And I think, man, as long as the coaches do that, if they feel lucky and grateful for the position, that's a good place to live from.
Without question. I daily, man, I wake up and I'm like, they're paying me to do this job. Now, don't let that – you can edit that part if you want. But I kid around with people all the time. I go to football every day and my wife goes to work. And she's a stay-at-home mom, but her job's – 10 times harder than mine. Man, I love what I get to do. I love the people I get to do it with. To see young men just develop and grow is what motivates me daily. You know, I'll tell you kind of a funny anecdote, like a little story from last year's team. You know, we did have tremendous success in year one. Like, we finished, like Brian said, we were 12-2 and we all these different things. We started the year 1-2. Like, it wasn't very pretty. We go to Ole Miss, and we can't break the huddle and operate the line of scrimmage offensively. And I'm like, golly, I'm a pretty bad head coach. This is ugly football. And then week two, we beat an FCS team Alabama A&M, who's a very well-coached team. And we did not play particularly well. We won by three scores, but I was still kind of like, man, we look like a little bit of a train wreck right now. And then week three, we go play App State. And App has been one of the better teams in this league over the last several years. And we lose that game 32-28 on a Hail Mary, the last play of the game.
So I watched maybe five plays of college football last year. I saw that play. Yeah. And my immediate thoughts went to, I know what that feels like being a head coach. That's exactly what I thought.
No doubt. Well, and so I'm sitting here, like my first reaction is, all right, get my young men off the field, right? Because they're jumping off the stands and they storm the field. And one of the young men who, man, I loved dearly was at the center of the Hail Mary play, was the last guy off the field. And, like, my heart broke for that kid. You know, like, Well, I'm gonna coach plenty more games and win some and lose some and have some crazy moments. But that was that kid's senior year and an opportunity to maybe avenge maybe what App State had done to Troy the last several years because they'd beaten the dog out of us. And so really in a – moment where, like, it was the first time I felt like I really got
shoot. We lost him.
Yeah.
So I'm coaching at the University of New Mexico, and we go to Utah State. I'm an assistant coach at New Mexico, and last play of the game, Hail Mary. All these guys go up and jump for it. There's a guy laying on his back underneath who had fallen down, the ball, like a pachinko machine, the ball bounces around, filters through everybody and lands on the guy that's on the ground. He's back.
This is the first time you've met your match and being off the grid. Right?
I feel so much better. Like, I've always been worried. Like, my confidence is boosted right now. I'm feeling good.
Well, hey, and us being on spring break and my video guy and IT crew not being here doesn't give us much better chance because I'm not an IT guru, but
keep going. You're talking about
finishing that up about App. So I get the team in the locker room and I immediately tell them, hey, look, guys, I'm never okay with losing. Like, losing stinks. All right. Like, I'm never going to pat you on the back after a loss and be like, hey, congratulations. Like, that's not okay. But I also told them fairly quickly after that, the 11th game of the 2021 season, App came to Troy and the score was 45-7. And I said, the third game of this season, five games later, we came up here to Boone, North Carolina, a week after they beat Texas A&M. And I said, and for 59 minutes and 58 seconds, we outplayed them.
Yeah.
All right. And I said, we played one play at the end of the game really poorly. And I said, to the team, I said, everybody give me your eyes. You know, those moments you want to look everybody in the eye. And I said, give me your eyes. I said, if anybody, media, your parents, your girlfriend, whoever wants to know what happened, tell them coach screwed it up. Like, yeah. I made the mistake. Like, I coached you to do that. Didn't go our way. I put you in a bad position, et cetera. I said, but here's the deal. There's some people in life who are going through, like, real serious stuff. And y'all may know some people going through real serious life-changing events. I said, this is maybe season-changing for us, but and it could become life-changing if you use it the right way or the wrong way. But I said, there's people that have real adversity. This adversity for us is pretty fun and pretty exciting, if you ask me, because we get to respond next week. Yeah. And not only do we get to respond next week, we get to do it against Marshall, who just beat Notre Dame. Yeah. Like, it's not just going to be a cakewalk. And so – I told the team in the next team meeting when I met with them again, after that locker room, I said, look, two things. If you're moping around the building or you're feeling sorry for yourself, you will not play in this week's game. Like, I will not play you.
Yeah.
And two, if you're wearing green, cause we played Marshall that week, if you think people pinch you hard on St. Patrick's Day when you don't wear green, wait till I come pinch you, because I see you wearing green in the building this week. And we had a big student assistant, big kid on our student assistant staff, a kid named Hall. He's wearing a polo in the back of the room that's green. He's in the back of the room and he starts to peel his polo off. And the whole room kind of looks back, and the kid gets like as red as an apple. I mean, but no, we had that a little bit of adversity. Now then, obviously have not had it in a while. We won 11 straight games, but I do agree with you. How you handle adversity and take that on, and then how you deflect success. Because you know, when things go well, it takes more than just one person for it to go well.
You know, there's so much fun. Just the rhythm that comes through adversity in college football, the next opportunity comes so fast. And that's one of the things that maybe the rhythm of life is a little bit different, where there's not the next scheduled test coming the next week to look forward to, and you don't know who you're playing. You know, and so in life, there's kind of challenges. You're not quite sure who you're playing sometimes or where it's going to come from.
Right.
And that constant state of readiness is part of it. But I think one of the cool things that you get to do as a head coach is help transform the adversity into opportunity, which and facilitate the growth that happens within the team, but within individuals. And you mentioned maybe the one young man that was right in the center of that play. And those moments to me and the relationships that are formed to help that young person move on. Wow, is that, there's just so much power in that. And in this brief pause that I've taken, if I were to say that the thing that's come back the most to me, and if I'd pass this on to any head coaches, is all of the texts disproportionately have come from former players, and they're not talking about the games or the scores. They're talking about moments, and moments of celebration, moments of hardship. They're talking about moments, and that in and of itself. So while you're coaching and while you're having success and while you're doing all this cool stuff professionally, what's been interesting to me and just this little glimpse of time is what the feedback is coming back is they're not talking about any of that. They're talking about the moments together while all that's going on. And man, if your staff, and it sounds like you already are, can continue that part while the success goes and the relationships are thriving within, man, there's a lasting effect of that where you really will have made a difference. And success just makes it a lot more fun.
there's no doubt, yeah.
So there's one other point, man, I wanted to share. As you talked about visiting with former players as you took the job over, when I became the coach at BYU, we had a similar thing, and I didn't think there'd be a new start without a symbolic event. And so we went up the canyon, and I divided the team, and I asked them to write down everything that was wrong with the program. And they were gone an hour and a half. And man, pages and pages. And so each group came, and I have them read off what they wrote. But then they had to throw it in the fire right after they read it. And man, it took forever. And it was really hard to hear as a new coach coming in. And then it was really interesting. I asked them to then go back in the same groups and write what they're willing to do about it. And they were back in about 10 minutes. And they would have maybe one thing on their paper or two, but those became kind of the guiding principles for that team for that year, because that's what they said they would do.
Right.
And so it seems like as I'm listening, somewhere along the line, you were really effective in helping the team understand how what was expected, but then getting them to choose, right, that this is what we're willing to do and want to do. And so what was that process like of them kind of learning to embrace you and your culture and system, but also then wanting to do that?
Man, what a really cool exercise. That's awesome to hear. I might steal some parts of that.
Totally a fair game.
Yeah. You know, we so many things that like, I'm a believer in, you got to know what you stand for. Or you'll fall for anything, right? Kind of like great the old country song, Aaron Tippin. So you've got to know what you believe in. And I've heard this analogy before. Like in your diet, you can have medicine when you're sick, right? But you can also over-medicate and give too much medicine or correction. And in your diet, you can also get rewards like a milkshake or dessert, but you can have too many desserts.
Yeah.
All right. I don't believe you can have too many core values brought up that matter as long as it's consistent. And for us, we describe the core values in our program as our water. Like that's what hydrates us. And I've never in my life been like, man, I'm just too hydrated today. Like can't drink. Like I know you can, but I've never done it where I've drank too much water. So we talk a lot about the things that matter, like your core values and your guiding principles, kind of like you mentioned being the water. It's what you need daily. Like you don't need medicine daily and you don't need dessert daily, but you need water daily. And so our core values, I talk about a lot. We draft our teams into off-season teams. We pick an offensive and a defensive captain, pair them up, and they draft the team in front of the entire roster. So you see where you got picked.
Yeah.
And then we go through our core values where I speak on them. And then they go into breakout groups and they have to answer questions and give feedback on it to where the players really, they take ownership of what are those core values and what do they look like in our program. So that's one area where we've really defined what our core values are. Our core values in our program are attitude, toughness, discipline, and love. Yeah. And the love one's maybe the coolest one. I think it's the one our team has embraced more than any of them. I think we have a great attitude. I think we're tremendously tough. I think we're somewhat disciplined. I think we can improve there. But I think we got great love for each other. And our definition of our program, love is an action, not a feeling. Yeah. So it's not like, hey, I saw a pretty girl walk down the street. That's not love. Yeah. And anytime you talk about love, I think you have to talk about sacrifice. So we're very detailed in how we talk about the core values. And then something you mentioned is about relationship. So once a week, every week on Friday, a position coach meets with his players individually, typically over breakfast, over at the dining facility, to go over their goals and their action plans that they've set for that semester, just to see, hey, are we on track with our action plans? Because if our action plans, if we're pursuing those, then we're probably going to get towards our goals. And so that's very important in our program. And then we do a lot of things to create connectivity and connection amongst the roster. We do a deal here. Maybe my favorite thing, I stole it from Dean Hood, who's the head coach at Murray State.
I know Dean.
Hoodie used to do a deal, and I've stolen it, called your Break Bread Brother. And so once a week, you're paired up with a different guy amongst the roster. So it may be a guy that's, a DB that's from the city with an O-lineman that's from out in the sticks. And they're tasked with having a meal together and answering questions with each other about learning about each other's background and their story. And I call out guys in front of the team every week. And I'm like, all right, they have to share what they learned about their teammate. And to me, I believe those create lasting relationships of meaning. And I also believe within the team, we're going to play harder and longer for each other if we know each other and care about each other and have each other's back. And knowing somebody's story is so valuable and so important because it allows you to understand them better. And if you're not pursuing that, I believe in college football, I think, man, you're missing a golden opportunity to get to know people better. And like you said, get text messages later about moments and then moments in their life. Man, some of my favorite things are getting pictures of kids that are being born or whatever. And it's like, man, I feel like a dad or an uncle or whatever, So, those are things that we do. We're very intentional about some of those rhythms that we are partaking in our program. Like, those are non-negotiable with me. Like you've got to build that lasting connection.
We were talking before the podcast and I see pictures. I can see three, looks like of your kids back behind you. Yep. Yeah. There you go. And we were talking about the same thing. So we were talking about the intentionality of relationships within a team. But then as you think about being a head coach and you have your own team at home, right? The most important team. And so Holly and I, and this is just the way we did it starting at BYU, but Sunday was not a work day for our staff, and that meant nothing. And a lot of coaches, right, they don't really understand that, and thought, man, that's one less day to prepare. And I was like, maybe we're going to be better prepared because of that. And I believe in a principle that work expands to the boundaries that you set. And if there's less time, I found efficiency became improved. And if I was the head coach that stayed till 10, sometimes they'd pace themselves just because they knew they had till 10. But what if they didn't? And what if they had less time? And then we go offside as a staff, even in the season, every Thursday after practice, they'd come out to my place. And I had a little pool house where we'd divide up offensively and defensively. But there's a pool and horses and a fishing pond. And that's so even in season, that was for my staff. But specifically with my wife at BYU, Wednesdays, 12 to 1:30, in my faith, there was a temple close by. And my wife would come down. We'd drive over, have a conversation. We'd worship together, drive back. And at least we had an hour and a half devoted to each other every week, right in the middle of the week, right when stuff was. But it was almost a symbolic, we're going to do it not when it's convenient, but right in the middle, to just make sure that we're first. And so there was a symbolism part that I think was powerful, but also amazing what an hour and a half without anything else can do for people. And having that rhythm always there was an anchor for us. And similar moments for my kids, of having one of those moments, breaking bread, or not collectively as a family, but each one individually. And so you put that in the context of a team and being a coach, and you add that to your plate, man, it starts to be hard to find, when do I do that? However, if you don't, someone else does and occupies that space. And so I'd love just to hear for you, as you're navigating now the head coaching world and success, and here are young kids, and what's working so far for you, and just with your own family and staying connected?
Yeah, there's certain non-negotiables that I make my calendar have to fit, that I don't squeeze out. My wife, Jenny, and I, kind of similar. We do it daily. We do a walk every day, and we walk through campus. And, you know, half the time there's people driving by honking or waving or saying, hey, coach, or whatever. But we walk daily from about 12 to 12:45-ish. And I don't care how busy the day is, I'm out for half an hour. Like, we go 2 miles in 35 minutes, you know, 16, 17 minute mile pace. And we're moving, we're not cruising, but it's our time to really, and sometimes that conversation may be spiritual. Sometimes it may be just about what's going on with the kids' lives. So when I do see them during the week, what I need to hit on. Sometimes it'll be about the stress of the week of the upcoming game. It's like our daily check-in. Because usually when I leave the house, she's asleep. When I get home, my wife might be asleep sometimes. Kind of to what you said, I kick the guys out at a decent hour a lot of the times. But from a marital standpoint, my wife and I walk daily. And that's not optional. Even if I try to get out of it, she's like, no, we're walking. And vice versa. Occasionally she does. But we stick to that. It's spring break, and we're going on a walk here at lunch today. So we do that every day. With my kids, so Mondays and Wednesdays, I wake up early. I leave. I come and run at the facility. But I finish my run out in front of their elementary school where my kids go to school. My wife picks me up in the Suburban. And so I'm a part of dropping them off at school on Monday and Wednesday after my run. And they're always giving me a hard time. Dad, you stink. You're sweaty. I'm like, good. Yeah, deal with it. So, and then I take them to school Tuesdays and Thursdays in my truck. So the mornings are when I know I'm going to see them. And then we do some things staff wise. And then individually with each child, I find things that I make sure I spend time with them on their terms, maybe with what their interests are. My 9-year-old, it's getting a little bit more real. My 4-year-old, it's still funny. And then staff wise, we're very, close as a staff. On Sundays, if we've played home or road game, we eat a family meal together as a staff. So we all have an early dinner together, usually at like 5 or 5:30. And then the guys are off after that. Like, it's not like we have to grind through the night. And then on Tuesdays, we have a team family meal where our entire team on Tuesdays eats on campus with all of our families and our players there on campus. So we do two family meals, one that's just for the staff, and then the other is staff and players. So a lot of opportunity for us to make sure that we're staying dialed into our families and being very, very intentional with that time. I hear horror stories of guys being there till 1 a.m. I'm like, there's a law of diminishing returns there. Like a good friend of mine named Dale Lindsay coached pro football a long time. He said, if you can't get done in 12 hours, you're making it up, you know? But so we eat a family dinner as an entire program on our entire staff on Sunday night. And then on Tuesday nights, we eat a team family dinner, which our families also come to.
Yep.
And so staffs, wives, kids, and our players are all at that dinner. And if they've got children, they're more than welcome. And so just a way for us to be around each other to create a family environment are things that we do. So I do believe, man, having to be intentional about that is vital, because it's very easy to neglect it. And like you said, if you're not filling that void, somebody is. And so we're very, very in touch with making sure we're connected. But we do another really cool thing as a staff. We take my wife and I, we're only, one of the great things about being in Troy, we're 2 hours from Destin and Panama City. And so we take a staff trip after spring ball, but before spring recruiting, with just coaches and wives only, no kids allowed, and just hang out. And it's really a 48 to 72 hour trip that everybody, my wife and I rent the houses. Everybody's free to do whatever they want to do. And the only mandatory event is a Saturday night dinner that me and my wife have catered in. And it's really just a time to make sure that, husbands and wives are spending together. And then also we're spending time staff wise, just getting to know each other on a deeper level. And, that football may come up, but naturally it does a lot of times because we can't get it out of our blood, but it really just to relax and enjoy each other's company and spend time together.
I think one of the things that number one, it's really powerful that the families see you making them a priority. That's because a lot of times families feel second to football as you get into this business. And without the intentionality and the things you're putting in place, which you are, and it's so nice to have a spouse that after a loss will say, no, we're walking today. And you say, no, I got too much to do. Now you have the same amount to do as you did when you're winning. It's really nice to have a spouse kind of hold you accountable for that. And if not, right, the outcome starts to drive everything. And everyone feels that. And you also said one other thing, and maybe we'll finish just here, kind of closing on this. So you mentioned your kids and their interests. So I have three boys. All different interests. One loves the performing arts and the theater and reading and academics. The other loves rodeo, and the other is into sports. And so it was pretty easy for me when I took them one at a time to do something specific in their realm. And whatever they liked, I would learn. And those were the activities we did, not the ones that I liked. And so really fun to try to figure ways out as husband and wife, even in season, for those anchor points with your kids as well. And it's enough, man, there's all kinds of, doesn't feel like there's enough time even with your own team. However, right, your spouse and your kids at the same time, they want to really know where they fit in your priority system. And the time won't ever be proportional, but the intention and your being there can certainly send that message weekly. And so just really fun to hear. And I think, man, already what a great start as a head coach, and that the challenges come, wow, when things aren't perfect, but when you hold true to those same things you're already doing, regardless of outcome, sometimes it's more impactful when things aren't going well and you still hold to the routines with your kids and your wife, and it's cemented that they are the priority. And so, yeah, just really cool. And so appreciate you being on today and to listen and to learn. And already, what a great start. And I'm not talking record-wise. Certainly, that was one of the interests in having you on. But usually what I find is the people that have early success or sustained success, there's some other thing that they're doing in balance that they've included that will help that perpetuate. And it looks like you're on a really strong path that way too. So thanks for sharing all those stories with us. Just really fun to hear.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And I enjoyed it. I stole something from you already today. Just in when y'all went and did the fire with the list of things not going right, and then come up with the things you can do to maybe get better. I challenge everybody all the time in our building. I'm like, hey, I love people that find ways to help us get better. Be a problem solver, not a problem finder. You know, like anybody can identify the problem, help me figure out how to make the problem better. But no, grateful for the time to spend with y'all. And man, I'm honored to be the head coach at Troy. I love what I do. Like I said, I don't wake up a day and think, oh, I got to go to work. I'm like, man, I get to go to work today. This is awesome. So, but
there's to what you were just saying, there's a really cool book I love to read. It's called Steal Like an Artist. So that doesn't mean steal like against the law. That means draw from other masterpieces that have been already sculpted or painted. And how can that like be applicable in Troy or Charlottesville or wherever? And I think, right, the ability to collaborate or to share with like-minded people that are usually more similar than different, even though there's different colors. But there's value because what's happening is young people are benefiting, and that's awesome. And so just really appreciated your time today, John. Thanks so much. Brian, what do you got to close us out?
Well, the only thing I would say is unfortunately for you guys, you might guys have to deal with a little bit more humidity if you're going to take them on those walks than Bronco had. those Provo Canyons a little bit drier than those conditions down there in Troy. But
it's significantly more humid here, without question.
But you know, terrific success last year. You guys got a high bar to clear. I mean, that was the one thing we didn't kind of really talk about is how you guys are going to deal with some expectations this offseason.
Yeah, well, I've had plenty of my friends in coaching remind me like, hey, you should manage expectations by not performing so well in year one. I'm like, I always thought you went as much as you could when you can. You don't expect it later. You do it when you can. But we walked into a fun situation last year with really, you know, a roster where a lot of times coaches come in and are new and they're like, wait till he gets his guys. I'm like, well, these are my guys. They wear the same logo I wear. Like they wear a Troy logo. I wear a Troy logo. So we're already on the same team. But man, thanks for that. We got to work it out for us to try to keep that up. But it'll be fun. I've already having a blast with the new team we have this year because it's very different and it's much younger, and there will be a lot different challenges. But we're excited about what's ahead.
Well, certainly best of luck going into 2023 and everything that's happening during the offseason. But John, thank you so much for stopping by and joining us here on Head Coach U.
Thank you, Brian. Good luck editing this with me and Bronco's technical difficulties, too.
No worries. We will make it seamless. Don't worry about it. But we do appreciate it. And we'll catch everybody out with another head coach next week.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.